Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. From Orange County, California, I'm Zach Birchie, and sitting in with me today, filling in for Justin, is everyone's favorite Bamboo Dong. Hi, Bamboo.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. So you've been pretty goddamn absent lately. What the hell have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Actually, the past week and a half, I've been glued to the TV watching the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, just eyes trained on the TV. I've been a total couch potato, which is strange considering I'm watching other people doing these amazing like athletic feats and I'm just sitting there with freaking popcorn in my hand just being like eyes open. Oh my gosh, look at that jump.
Do you watch everything? Like every event?
I watch everything. Everything. No, and like the thing is I also like I'm obsessed with hockey.
Yeah.
So the NBC website actually shows live hockey during the day. So like even when I'm at work, I have the game playing in the background and I'm just like, oh God, hockey. So hockey, curling, like freaking I watch everything. I love curling also. I just love the Winter Olympics. So, like, this is the best 2 weeks of my life every 4 years.
This is the first year I think I've noticed curling getting any kind of remotely mainstream acceptance or interest. It's always the butt of the jokes. Like, that's always like, oh, curling, ha, ha, ha. But I was watching it. I finally started watching it. And
it's really fun to watch. It's really intense.
It's fun to watch. It's kind of like shuffleboard, except...
Yeah. On ice.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. Although I have to admit, like, I'm still the sort that isn't all that interested if it's, like, Finland v. Czechoslovakia. Like, I don't really care. Like, it's got to be a country that I sort of give a shit about, like Canada or the USA or...
Yeah.
Japan or something like that. Like I don't really care if it's two little podunk countries out there. We have listeners in those countries, so sorry. I don't really care when your team is playing. If they're
what? They probably feel okay because every country in the world is better than the US at curling. So
yeah, that's true. Aren't we already out of it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we suck at curling.
Yeah, you mentioned you were thinking of taking it up.
Oh yeah. So apparently Orange County has a curling league and they also do lessons every now and then. So, you know, me and a couple of my friends, like we're like really into curling. And you know, I think the reason why people like curling now is because like, so I've been watching curling for a few years now because, you know, I just like turned it on late one night and I was like, oh, this is really fascinating. So it's like people like me who are just like, no, 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 trust me. You have to watch this. Here's a bottle of vodka. Just sit down and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that bad. And people are like, oh, this sucks, blah, blah, blah. But then they start watching and they're like, you know.
Yeah.
This is strangely addictive. And there's all these, like, people who, like, these, you know, famous people who are getting into curling. You know, the 49ers tight end, Vernon Davis, is, like, a huge curling fan now. So people are like, well, if he likes football and curling, it can't be that bad.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, everybody always says, like, the Winter Olympics just aren't as big a deal in America as the Summer Olympics.
Yeah, that's true, but I love Winter Olympics. Everything's faster because there's gravity.
Yeah, there was some comment, I saw it on Twitter, that the Winter Olympics are just increasingly insane and difficult ways to hurdle yourself down a hill. Like, that's kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah.
So we both caught, along with most of the rest of America, Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island, which, Bamboo, if you didn't know, it's a mental institution for the criminally insane.
I don't know if you knew, but Leo's character, he is a duly appointed federal marshal.
And they're there to investigate this woman, and it's like she evaporated right through the walls.
Quite frankly, Zach, screw your sense of calm.
I'm really glad that movie came out just so I don't have to ever see that trailer again.
So often.
It's totally the vantage point of 2010.
Oh my gosh, stop. Rewind that.
Yeah. Another overplayed trailer. But I liked it a lot. I thought it was really good.
I liked it. And you know what really made me like it, though, like sealed my opinion, the ending was fantastic. And not because I didn't see the twist, but because he actually was still one step ahead of me.
Yeah.
Being Scorsese. And the last line is brilliant. And I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but that last line like is makes the movie, I think.
Yeah, it's just a really it's fun to see someone, and Martin Scorsese is a master, everybody knows that, and it's fun to see him do kind of a genre movie. The last movie he made like this was that Robert De Niro Cape Fear from 1992.
Yeah.
Which I just watched last night and doesn't really it's not that good. I mean, it's okay, but it's clear, like, Shutter Island was a much better thriller from him. Like, I don't know. It was just very well constructed. I thought it was appropriately creepy and spooky in the right places, and I loved the flashback sequences to World War II. Those were amazing. Like, just beautifully shot. It was beautiful-looking film. I mean, great stuff. I really liked it. I think a lot of people are complaining. You can't really talk about the movie too much without spoiling it, and I would argue that if you've been spoiled on this, don't see it, because you're just going to be sitting there the whole time waiting for the twist to come. And yeah. I didn't, and I, you know, you pick up on it pretty soon. It's not that tough to figure out, oh, here's what's going on here. But if I knew that for a fact going in, I probably would have enjoyed it less, I think. That's what I think, anyway. So every week we pick a show to talk about, and the show I've been seeing kind of splattered all over Twitter lately and the internet, the one everyone's talking about, is Gainax's new show for this spring season, which is on Crunchyroll, Hanamaru Kindergarten. Now, I should say up front, of course I knew going in this is not my kind of thing, but what did you think of it, Bamboo?
I guess I have several sub-points regarding my opinion. It's, the show itself is fairly innocuous. I mean, it's very innocent. It's almost kind of cute, I guess, if I like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't enjoy watching shows about little kids, but it's cute. You know, there's these kindergarten kids, and they, like, run around, and they make cute jokes, and, you know, there's adults, like, there's some, like, romantic subplot and all things, but because of my personal taste in anime and movies, TV shows, etc., I don't really think shows like that really have a point in existing, because, like, they appeal to a very, very specific type of anime fan. The type of anime fan who is usually, like, a mid-20-somethings-year-old male who thinks, like, kindergarten kids or, like, their antics are oh so charming and cute.
Yeah, and I, as I was sitting there watching it, I'm like, okay, and immediately I started flashing back to, like, the 90s. And if I were sitting there watching, say, like, I finished Evangelion, and someone said, 10 years from now, this is Gainax's hot new show, I would have said, what the shit is this? Like, did we all suddenly become fucking 12-year-olds in the future? Like, why are they making this? And anime has just, and they're still producing action anime. That still comes out. But I think something like Hanamaru Kindergarten, it's so different, and it's so for that audience. It's so for its own specific audience that now I think you can definitively say there are two kinds of anime fans, the people who like Hanamaru Kindergarten and shows like it,
and
the rest of us.
Exactly.
And that's not to denigrate either group. I can totally see how someone would just get really caught up in the cute antics of these cute little characters.
Right.
Tell me if you think I'm wrong on this. I think part of the reason I don't find anything, there's nothing of value in it to me. I am, you know, known for being a big sap for cute little animals. Like, that's a thing that I do.
Yeah.
But I don't, I've never thought little kids were cute. That's never been, like, a thing. Little kids are annoying. They yell in movies and shit. You know, if it were an anime about kittens, I would probably watch it.
I love Chi Sweet Home. I think it's adorable.
Yes, that's a good example of a. Not only that, Chi Sweet Home is 3 minutes long.
Right,
it's not
exactly. 20, I don't need like a 23-minute long show about a freaking kindergarten kid.
Yeah, and I think that's where the difference in taste lies. And I think a big part of this is there is sort of an unseemly side that's been associated with these kinds of anime. Now, this should be made very clear. There's nothing like that in here. It's very innocent.
Right. In fact, you know, I think it's worth even saying that, like, the characters themselves even acknowledge that there's, like, nothing creepy going on. You know, like, the characters, like, there's lines of dialogue about how, like, what? Like, I don't mean that at all. Like, I like this adult over here, you know? So, like, it's, and you know, I even want to say that, like, I don't dislike the show because I think there's anything seedy about it. I don't think there is. It's completely innocent.
Yeah.
Completely innocent, cutesy show about these cute little kindergarten kids doing kindergarten things. Like, but I don't find that show interesting. And maybe it's because I really enjoy American TV shows, and there really is not an American equivalent.
No. Like, I mean, could you imagine if something, say, like, this show where, let's say it's even still animated, and it was just animated in an American style rather than an anime, and it aired on, like, Adult Swim. Nobody would watch it,
because the only way they would watch it is if it was every character was, like, Stewie, you know, from Family Guy.
Right.
Or, like, it was just little kids just walking around being, like, you know, like, oh, man, shit cock, you know?
Yeah,
that would be
right.
different.
The Shinnecock kids, yes. Yeah.
Like a Shinchan, you know? Like, but this is obviously not Shinchan. This is like, oh no, I threw my hat in the river. However will I get it? You know, like that kind of crap.
Yeah, it's treacle. I mean, it's not bad, and I totally get why some people dig it, and I'm not knocking people who like it, but I just, this is so far from the reason I got interested in anime. This is so far from anything I would watch if I didn't work with anime for a living. It is not why I became an anime fan.
Right, and I
think lumping it, like, it, I think at some point we have to sort of corral these things off into, well, there's the people who are into this kind of thing, but, like, I wouldn't use that to introduce someone to the medium of anime at all.
No, not. And you know, people could argue, like, yeah, but they have shows like, you know, the Rugrats, Dora the Explorer, blah, blah, blah. But those shows are for kids.
They don't. Tom,
Kindergarten is specifically not for little kids. I highly doubt there's some 7-year-old who can't wait to go home and friggin' watch, you know, Hanamaru Kindergarten. It's going to be some otaku, you know.
Yeah, the show is innocent, but it's for a not innocent crowd, which is,
right.
It's a weird thing. And I think it's an upset, like, there, it's been acknowledged there is an obsession with cute in Japanese culture. It's very acknowledged that that's what that is. And infantilism and this kind of thing, you know, little kids being cute and doing cute, mundane little things, that's become this sort of cottage industry.
Right.
And it is a cultural thing that I'm never going to be interested in it. And something like this, I'm never going to be interested in it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to stress that that shouldn't be a reason to divide anime fans. Like, I'm not judging the guy who likes the show. I am not judging him. He's
right.
He's cool. That's cool. That's cool. Like, you like that. That's fine.
I'm not going to watch the show.
Yeah, it just doesn't interest me. And that shouldn't be seen as like a value judgment or like I'm looking down on him or I think he's creepy or something like that. Okay. That's not what's going on here. It's just, I think the people who are into these shows that take offense when people say like, oh man, what the hell? I think it's important to step away from being offended a little bit and just say, this is pretty alien stuff. It's pretty out there.
Yeah.
You know, to someone with pretty standard mainstream American taste.
Well, I think an American equivalent, like you know, for anime fans, the kind of anime fan who likes Hanamaru Kindergarten is the same kind of, you know, American TV audience that watches Meerkat Manor. Like, Meerkat Manor is like the US TV equivalent of Hanamaru Kindergarten.
That is a weird comparison. I hadn't thought about it that way. I know what you're saying. I'm not sure I 100% agree with it. Because to me, the dividing line between cute little animals and little kids is so strong that I just can't put them
together.
But
Meerkat Manor is, I think it's a good analogy because that show takes these cute little animals, but like personifies them as these like weird teenager American kids.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So, like, so it's not just like a show about, hey, look, these cute weasels and walruses and chimpanzees. It's like, no, like, Romeo's going to the other den to pick up his date. Isn't that cute? You know? And this is like, oh, look at this little girl. She's trying to reach her hat. Isn't that cute? You know?
Yeah.
It's almost patronizing. In a way, I don't know.
I guess my point is, like, watching this show and other shows like it, and it's gotten to the point now where I see the spring preview list of shows, and each one has a piece of promotion, has a promotional art with it. I could tell you which ones I'm not going to watch.
Right.
Like, because they look like Hanamaru Kindergarten, and that shit is just not for me.
Right.
And it's important, and I think just, it's such an important distinction to say this is not a value judgment on the fans who do like this stuff.
Right.
You just can't expect everyone to like it, you know? It's a pretty rarefied taste. It's a pretty acquired taste. I think that's the perfect way to say it. Acquired taste.
And yet, I mean, the fans get really butthurt about it if you don't like it. I mean, the thing is, like there are people who don't like shoujo. There are people who don't like mech shows. But mech fans aren't going to be like, what?
Well,
raging on the internet. They're like, well, whatever. You know, you're missing out by not watching Gundam or something.
Well,
whereas you say you don't like Hanamaru Kindergarten, they're like, don't judge me, blah.
Yeah, but, and you know what? I can sympathize with them a little bit, or at least empathize with them a little bit, because they probably feel like they get shit on by other fans who criticize them for liking this stuff, which is admittedly it's pretty weird stuff. It's pretty far out there, so they're probably very sensitive to being told, well, that shit is not for me, man, I can't get into it. Yeah, I could see I think there's a little bit of hypersensitivity going on, but yeah, I can kind of see, like, okay, they just feel a little put upon. They feel like they're sort of the butt of a lot of jokes, and that probably gets really old after a while. So I can kind of empathize with that a little bit, but I think it goes too far most of the time.
And I think what it is, though, and the problem is, Hanamaru Kindergarten is completely innocent, but there are shows that aren't as innocent, and oftentimes there is like an overlap of fans of those two types of shows. And, you know, so it's, you know, if some guy likes, I don't even know, the last weird pan-flashing, you know, show to come out. I mean, fans will associate those titles in their heads. Like, oh, okay, well, you know, you may like Hanamaru Kindergarten and it's completely innocent, you know, but also, you know, there are other shows out there like that look very similar, but may not be so innocent.
Yeah, but you have to, I can appreciate nuance enough to know that the guy who maybe is, you know, into the 17-year-old fan service shows, you know, shows featuring 17, 16-year-olds that are fan service-y, I can understand nuance enough to where I know he's watching that. Maybe he is totally, like, into it. That's whatever. That's his business. But for something like Hanamaru Kindergarten, I'm not going to tell him, you're also a creep for watching this because I think you're getting off on it. Like, that's right. that's where the line has to be drawn. You have to appreciate that the guy does have nuance in his viewing. Like, mm-hmm. It's not all the same. He's not, you know, he's watching this because it's cute, not because it's sexy. He'll watch another show because he thinks it's sexy.
Right, right.
So that nuance is important, and I don't think that gets said often enough, and I think that's where a lot of the butt hurt and a lot of the feelings are hurt and stuff like that. That's where a lot of the people draw their dividing lines, you know, because that is never, that's never really spoken. It's never really understood by a lot of people that you have to appreciate the nuance in something like this. That said, I would not wax poetic about Hanamaru Kindergarten using my real name on the internet if I ever wanted to get a job again.
Right.
If I ever wanted to find employment again, because this is pretty alien to American culture.
I mean, I was going to say that. I mean, in general, even in American culture, like, it's completely okay to like cute animals, you know, like, more people, if you told your friends you went to go see a dog show over the weekend, they'd be like, well, that's kind of weird, but that's cool. If you told me you went to go see like a child pageant, they'd be like, you know.
Yeah, especially if you're you're a single guy in his 30s going to child pageants, not a lot of people are going to understand you.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the hypersensitive fans also have to realize, like, our point of view also. You know, like, we both maybe need to read some understanding.
The fighting continues. Okay, let's go ahead and bring our guest in.
Jen will be right back after these messages. And now, back to Jen.
Okay, we're back. My guest today is Charlene Ingram, brand manager at Funimation, and I guess we could call you a professional cosplayer, right?
There's really, professional cosplayer is kind of a loaded term. Yeah. There's really no professional cosplayer because it's really more of a hobby because cosplayers don't get paid to dress up as anime characters. Some cosplayers are very lucky. They get to go into modeling and more of that type of thing. But as for me, dressing up as an anime character, we don't get paid to do that. But I was a professional seamstress, so okay. I guess I was a professional at sewing and a cosplayer. So I guess you can kind of put it that way. But
you do cosplay at your job at Funimation, right?
Well, occasionally. I have cosplayed at Funimation for brand promotions and stuff like that, and it's kind of fun to have a crazy cosplayer in the office because there's always that, you know, that freaky factor of having someone who's from the fandom in the mix of things. But yeah, I utilize it when I can. And it's always fun to be able to, you know, change into a costume in your office and just, you know, sit at your desk dressed as Sailor Venus or whatnot.
Right.
It's just fun.
Okay, so tell us briefly from the beginning, you know, your brief history of cosplay in your life.
Okay, brief history is not super brief. I actually first started cosplaying in 1998, but I didn't go to a convention until 1999. My first convention was actually in Canada. It was Anime North. So I've been cosplaying ever since then. It's been quite a ride. There's been so many changes. I mean, just you could do a whole hour just talking about what cosplay was like and traveling was like before 9/11 and after 9/11, because you were severely limited on props you could take on planes after that. So it was, it's been what, over 10 years now. It's kind of crazy to think about. I've been cosplaying that long, but it's something that I love and it never gets old. And I like dressing a little bit outlandishly, so it's a good hobby for me. And mostly, I am just such a big anime nerd. Any person who's really nerdy into anime that likes to sew, I think we all kind of fall into cosplay in one way or another.
Right, right. So you were an anime nerd first, and then that dovetailed into... Were you already really into, fashion design and stuff like that beforehand, or did these two sort of come around at the same time? How did that happen?
Well, I've been sewing since I was in sixth grade. Okay. And I've always been fascinated by making my own clothes. I found that to be kind of a cool thing to do. I like to dress a little bit different when I was in school, but I was never really into fashion per se. I was never really, and I still never really think of myself as being truly fashionable. I just see myself as being a little eccentric. But I always loved animation, and I got really into anime when I was my later years of high school and college, and I couldn't stop watching anime and everything on Cartoon Network, everything I could get from the comic book store, pre-ordering Ranma 1/2 VHS tapes one episode at a time, that type of thing. And then I found out there was anime conventions. It's like, oh my gosh, there's a bunch of people who go and get together and watch anime, and some of them dress up in costumes. This is the best thing ever. Let me go.
Right. I think I'm hearing Adam Sheehan's infamous cat in the background there. Is that...
Well, our cats, I think the offender right now is one of the Bengals. Oh, we have two Bengal cats and a normal cat. I think the offender right now is Thundercleese, the Bengal kitten.
Thundercleese.
Yeah. And the other Bengal is Tyga.
Okay. We'll get into the cats a little later with the Twitter questions. I just wanted listeners to know who else was on the mic.
Yeah, so, I actually had to laugh earlier when you were saying how you weren't that fashion forward, but you like to make clothes. Because I just picture in, seventh grade, everyone in the lunchroom was like, oh, there, that's Charlene. She makes her own clothes.
like Pretty in Pink.
There's a funny story about my middle school years. One of the first things I made was this velvet jacket, and I saw a similar jacket on Janet Jackson. I thought it was the coolest thing ever, so I went to my fabric store and I got velvet, and I made this jacket, and I had no concept of the nap of velvet and how you should only sew velvet when the pile is going a certain way. I just kind of sewed it all haphazardly, and it was just this, mess of a thing, but it had a cool texture. And I also didn't understand you couldn't wash that type of velvet. So I wore that jacket until it was threadbare. And it was just horrible, horrible. I mean, it was already awkward enough as a seventh grader. And then I had a horrible purple velvet jacket. But, I thought I looked hot, so I guess I was okay.
So now you, I would argue you are one of the very few names in American cosplay. Like, I've seen your name floating around for at least 7 years or so. Maybe 5-7 years. I knew sort of who you were being, in proximity to the cosplay community, being a journalist and occasionally having to dive into that scary world to get in touch with people to do articles and stuff on it. But you sort of were, as much as you could call it, kind of a celebrity in that world. When did that come about, and what was that like for you?
Well, my first convention I was a guest at, officially, was Animagic in California in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. And that was, how have things changed since then?
Yeah.
And that was really, at first I was like, what, you want me to come to your convention and talk to people about something I'm doing anyway? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fun. I did that, and that was when I was with my first cosplay group I was with. It was called Sailor Jamboree. Anybody who's really
good.
Yeah, I remember that.
Way back in the day. Oh. Sailor Jamboree. And we did a little performance there, and I was asked to be, my second convention I was asked to be a guest at was Anime North, which was my first convention was Anime North, and being asked to be a guest there was just, it was just amazing. It was like winning American Idol to me. I was so happy. Mm-hmm. And then I guess once you go and they look at you do panels and they see that you're not a complete jerk face to the fandom and you can present yourself pretty well. Everybody who, people go to different conventions that run conventions, and I got asked to go to other conventions, and it's still, it's still a few a year, and I just love it. It's still as exciting now as it was back then. I'm just not as scared to talk in front of people as it was.
So, actually, one of my earliest memories of you was one of my first anime conventions, and you were a guest judge, and I remember, I guess, you and your pals doing some soccer wars skit.
Oh yeah. Oh, that was the other thing that I am really, really, really nerdy about. Number one, Sailor Moon. I'm so nerdy about Sailor Moon. And number two is Sakura Tyson. I think there's maybe 10 of us in America who are really into Sakura Tyson.
Less.
One of us 10.
Less.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's, it's kind of, it's not as popular as I think it should be, but then again, I have strange tastes. But I, not only do I love Sakura Taisen, I love the musicals. So if there's an anime and there's a musical version of it, I probably have it because it's just so outlandish and sparkly costumes. So,
right.
Yeah, I love doing that. And anytime I can get my friends together and get them to agree to dress in Sakura Taisen cosplay, I'm totally going to bribe them to do that because it just, I have fun, and it's based on Takarazuka, which is another nerdiness of mine, so, yeah.
So, just getting into the mechanics of doing this, what's the hardest sort of costume to put together? Because after a while, like, I've been doing this 10 years, I've been to my fair share of anime conventions, they all do kind of start to blur together. Like, mm-hmm. you kind of feel like, well, I've seen hundreds of these costumes over the year, they all kind of blend together, but some of them do look like they're a little bit more difficult to put together than usual. What is the most, like, what's the most difficult costume you've ever put together?
Oh, they're all, after, you know, starting especially a few years ago, I don't sit down and make a costume unless there's something on there I haven't done before, because I have to have that element of challenge there. Hmm. So there's a few that are really stand out as being really difficult for different reasons. I'd have to say overall, the most difficult costume I did was my Trinity Blood costume, which had crazy hair, crazy corset, crazy everything, you know, bondage boots, all that, and lots of jewelry. And we did that, my cosplay group, HCC Cosplay, we did that for Worldcon. We did Trinity Blood costumes, and I, you know, had to pick a baddie because she was just awesome, and no one really cosplayed her, so there's that. And we also did, for Comic-Con the next year, we did Five Star Stories. Mm. And Five Star Stories is always, you know, super-duper-duper difficult. So those two are probably the most difficult ones I have done personally. I do a lot of them that might look like they're more difficult, but are actually just tedious. It's a lot of, you know, beads over and over and over again. I wouldn't say it was, you know, horribly difficult because, hey, you can, if you're doing a beaded project, you just, you know, bring your big skirt over, sit in front of the TV and watch anime and catch up. So it's kind of a wash.
So it sounds like for you, the love is really in the craftsmanship. Like, this is like almost like woodworking or, you know, like a hobby like that, where it's about the craft of it, you know, more so than design or fashion or anything like that. Is that, would you say that's accurate?
Yes, I've always, well, you know, every cosplayer loves getting their picture taken and feeling like a princess.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I've always really liked the creation of the costumes. When the final stitches are done on the sewing machine, I won't say that I've gotten over it already. I'm already looking for the next thing to make. Mm. So there's, you know, there's some costumes I haven't even done a photo shoot of because I get them done. And I'm like, okay, well, now that I know that I can do that, great, I'll move on to something else. So I'm not, I'm actually, one of my weak points is, you know, making an archive of all of my works because I'm so, I just like to create. And that, I mean, that's just me. Some cosplayers, they like to make the costumes and go do a photo shoot or just wear them around a convention or put them on display or just, you know, look really hot in them. I'm one of those freaks that just, I just like to make stuff.
So, I mean, just as a side note, could you ever see yourself going into, like, costume production for, like, film or something like that?
I actually worked for 5 years in Las Vegas in wardrobe and costume making for the Venetian and some other hotels at the modeling talent agency that I worked for that service some of the hotels. I got to have that backstage life of, you know, constantly working, deadlines, taking care of cast, everything, just, you know, hardcore day-to-day, all that. I love that. Was, you know, those 5 years were great. But that was about my limit for what I wanted to do in, as far as professional costuming. I just wanted to move on to something else because I have so many things that I'm interested in. That was a lot of fun. I have so many memories from there. But if I was ever to go back to something like that, I would want to go back more on the construction side.
Would you rather go move into something like film rather than, you know, the Venetian?
Well, film is a little bit different than stage, of course.
Yeah.
I am, with my natural flair and the way that I like to do things, I would be more at home with live performances, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't be opposed to film. It's just not where my passion would lie because you can't use nearly enough rhinestones in film as you can on stage.
Okay. I think I understand. Okay, so now the cosplay community in and of itself, I haven't even looked at it in years because I, you know, we would cover cosplayers heavily at Anime Insider when I worked there for Wizard. But since then, it's become kind of a less and less thing, and I'm not as familiar. Is it still as big as it used to be? Is it still as chock full of drama? I mean, I can't imagine you're still all that close to the fan community of it.
Yes, it's actually growing a lot, and it's growing a lot worldwide. It's really, really amazing. I'm not sure how many anime fans in America or U.S. and Canada know about some of the works that other countries, you know, besides Japan, are doing. For instance, Mexico has an amazing cosplay community. And some of the stuff that Mexican cosplayers are doing will just blow your mind.
Really?
Yeah, same for Europe, Russia, England, France, Germany, and of course, Italy. There's just so much stuff coming out there. I mean, Brazil is really, really strong. All of Latin America is just, it's growing. So there's so much more diversity in cosplay now, and there's many more people in cosplay. And as with anything where any form of beauty is involved, there will be lots and lots of drama.
Right.
So... With more people in the club and more people wanting to make a statement in the club and get noticed, there's going to be more drama. It's just a little bit different, I would say.
How so?
It's a little bit more... I'm seeing a lot more girls who want to use it as a gateway to modeling.
Right.
And less about, I really love this show, therefore I want to dress up as this to help me experience that anime better or share with people, hey, I like this. Because it used to be, especially when I first started cosplaying, if, say, I was dressed as some random character from Sailor Moon, someone at a convention would say, hey, she's dressed as random character from Sailor Moon. I bet she likes Sailor Moon. Let me go up to her and talk about Sailor Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would have a nice conversation about Sailor Moon, geek out, you know, make a friend for life in some cases. Now you see more and more girls, or, you know, guys too, mostly the girls. So you go up to them and say, hey, you're dressed as, you know, this character. Oh, wow, I love this show. Let's talk about it. And they go, huh? What? I'm just wearing this. And then you're kind of, my little geeky heart kind of weeps like, oh, okay.
You're just a shallow bitch. Maybe yeah. Not that harsh.
Me, there's like a growing population of these cosplayers who are just total attention whores.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because, like, honestly, there are some costumes, and I'm like, dude, the only reason you wore that is because you barely have to cover your nipples.
Yeah, and there's some, I mean, there's some characters that don't wear a lot that are a lot of fun. And then there's some that don't wear a lot that are, well, clearly you want attention and someone to take your picture and put it on the internet.
Right. I mean, just because you're wearing a string bikini and you have a volleyball doesn't mean you're like, oh, look at me. I'm, you know, dead or alive. That's obviously bullshit.
Well, I mean, so in other words, that's a combination lazy attention whore. And then on the male side, you get a guy who puts on a white shirt and then he's L from Death Note. Like,
yeah.
You get that too. So I guess is there a boundary that people eventually breach where the difference between everybody who's just kind of screwing around and the people who are really serious about crafting costumes? I mean, is there a time limit? Is there just a skill check or something like that? Like, where's that boundary? Does it exist?
I think it just... Well, for some people, it does. But I think it just fundamentally comes down to how much are you into this genre? Like, how much, for instance, for me, and I really can only speak for myself and my personal experience of cosplay, but if I'm going to cosplay something, I need to look at that, watch that series, and say, how much do I like this character in order for me to sit down at my sewing machine for 10 to 20 hours to make their outfit and dress up as them?
Mm-hmm.
So there's... that level, just, you know, how into it are you that you're willing to just go all out? But on the other hand, there's some people who all they want to do is put on an orange hoodie and a blonde wig and run around and think they're Naruto and they're just having the greatest time in life.
Right.
And you know what? That's infectious because obviously that's what they're doing to have fun. You know, they might not be like me and want to wear a big orange yellow cupcake dress. That might not be their idea of fun.
Right.
So it's all how you want it to be. And it's just like, you know, fan art or fan fiction or anything else. You know, some people write fan fiction, don't check their grammar and their spelling.
Yeah.
Some people who do fan art just kind of like, here, you know, here's a drawing of Goku. Isn't it awesome? Upload. So
right.
So the next obvious, like, big obvious step in your life, your career, was going to work at Funimation. Tell us how that happened.
Well, aside from being a cosplayer, I'm also I love business. I love the business side of things, you know, so much more than the flashy, beautiful, like, modeling side of things. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to be helpful to the cosplayers. And I started with Kyle of cosplay.com. I started a wig business called Cosworks. And we built that from the ground up, and just, it's a wig store that caters to cosplayers, specifically colors, styles, all that stuff. A great base wigs to work with and create whatever you want to. And we also sold some cosplay materials, cosplay accessories, all kinds of fun stuff. And we went to all the conventions and sold online. We still sell online. And all that business experience and just this love for this industry and all my knowledge for anime, there was an opening for a brand manager. And I decided to go out for it. And I did all the interviews. And it was so weird as a fan going to a place that you once learned about through your DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And meeting all these people you've seen in credits and seen at conventions, and they're always a little bit larger than life to you. And now you're sitting down and you're interviewing, and you might get to work with these people. And it's kind of, you know, partially nerdgasm, partially, oh my gosh, I hope I'm good enough.
So at one point you were like, oh my God, you're the Lance Highskull.
Yeah, I've seen Lance at conventions for so long, and I was like, oh my gosh, Lance is interviewing me. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, because he's really in my mind too. We could totally, you know, geek out together, and we did during some of the interviews talking about, you know, random obscure anime and just totally nerding out for a moment. And I will admit there are a few parts where I forgot I was in an interview. I was just, you know, in full, you know, anime is awesome. This is why everybody needs to be watching it. And this is why I need to be working on it. And just purely from the heart. And it's just, in itself, the whole process, you know, it was a lot of, you know, grueling rounds, burning desire. It was kind of like a shonen competition anime in some places. Mm-hmm. I had a little soundtrack going on in my head. And
at which point did you have to fight Lance High School with your fist?
I didn't. I don't think I fought him. I used my charm power, I guess.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But yeah, one day I remember I got the call asking if I wanted it, and I squealed. And it didn't feel real for the first couple months. And some days it still doesn't feel real. Walking into my office and seeing the anime posters and the packaging, the stuff I worked on, and all those memories. And sometimes I sit back and go, oh my gosh, I worked on this. Or go to Best Buy and I'm just buying my random nerdy, you know, movie of the week. And I brush by a box of something that I helped launch. Mm-hmm. And it just like, holy crap, I worked on that. Oh my gosh. And someone's picking it up and looking at it and they're going to buy it. Oh my gosh. So.
Right, right. Yeah. Tell us what a brand manager does.
Well, brand manager is like, kind of like if the anime title was a big wheel and all the parts, all the spokes of that wheel were saying, you know, art, trailers, production, copywriting, all this stuff are the spokes in the wheel. And the brand manager is the center of it. They make all those parts work together. The brand manager interfaces with their counterpart in Japan. So we talk to Japan. We talk about all of our marketing plans, what we want to do with the shows, and why this is the way it'll make it extra awesome, I guess is the best way to say it. And just, they're kind of the custodian of the title. They help launch the title. They make sure all the parts work together and they make something that the consumer would want to buy. And they're also where the buck stops. So if something doesn't work, brand manager is the point to go talk to and say, hey, why didn't this work? So they're kind of like the diplomat or representative and kind of the glue of all the parts. But it's basically the person who markets each title from beginning to end, from the license announcement to all the creative brief, all the planning, approving the packaging, all that stuff, all the way up through launch. And then some titles get relaunches, re-releases, and all that. And each one of us are in charge of about 30, 40 brands a piece. So you're juggling all those balls at once for many things.
Now, do you get to select the titles you work on, or are they assigned?
They are assigned by Lance. Mm-hmm. And we all can, if there's a title that we like, we can say, you know, in the beginning of the process, when it's being negotiated, we can say, hey, I'd really like to work on that. And it all comes down to what your personal brand launch schedule is like, because you can't get overwhelmed. You can't have too many things releasing at the same time. And if you have, they want all of us to have a well-rounded plate. Mm-hmm. So no one person gets all the fan service shows. No one person gets all the shonen action shows. So they keep it, you know, they keep us pretty even across the board. But if there's one thing that, say, I really, really, really wanted to work on, I would go, hey, I really, really want to work on this. Here's why. This is why I would be awesome for it. And then a decision is made. And you don't, you know, not everybody gets everything they want. Right. And but it's kind of cool that way because it helps you experience lots of different genres and those strategies.
So how much of your job is coming up with really cool marketing ideas that get shot down by your Japanese counterpart?
Well, I don't know if it's my charm points or whatever, but I've actually been pretty lucky that not a lot of my crazy ideas have been just shot down in flames. Mm-hmm. it's usually little things here and there, like little packaging things, little advertising things that you would think are pretty inconsequential, but in Japan, they're kind of a big deal, and they don't want things to be promoted in a certain way. But as far as some of the, like, outlandish things or things that I think are outlandish, the first thing I really tested the waters with were the Dragonaut booty shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, thanks for that.
Because, you know, what do you need more than, you know, having a pair of booty shorts when watching Dragonaut? So,
nothing really, apparently.
They're actually really nice. Booty shorts are really stretchy. Oh. They're kind of super awesome.
Just not designed to fit any of the potential customers for that show.
Well, there were some people at conventions who decided to model them unsolicited, and it was kind of awesome in its own way.
They might not to ever go by the Funimation booth. Then they're just going to be fans in Dragonaut booty shorts dancing around.
Yeah, but it's fun, and I, coming from a creative background, I like to think of the outlandish things to do. I kind of do. I'm a little strange in that way, so that's the funnest part, but it's not, of course, not the whole thing.
So that brings me to something I had to congratulate your marketing team there for coming up with a marketing campaign. And I really have to congratulate you. This is going to sound sarcastic, but I'm being sincere. Uh-huh. I have to congratulate you for coming up with a marketing campaign where the fanboy thinks he's the funny, clever guy for repeating your ad slogan. And I'm referring, of course, to the Strike Witches War on Pants thing. I am seeing that repeated everywhere by otaku who think they're the funny guy for bringing it up. My hat is off to you. Great marketing there.
Well, that was, unfortunately, Strike Witches is not one of mine, but I love the tagline, I love the whole launch campaign of Strike Witches so much, and it's really, and we're all of us are pretty nerdy in our own ways, and actually the brand manager for Strike Witches, for Katsucon, we used in our promotion, because I happen to be at Katsucon, someone ordered a replica of the Mission Accomplished banner.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
And it's got the same font, it's got the American flag, and it's just so aggressively patriotic. It's just so awesome. And it's hanging in his office right now, and I got him these American flag ribbons that he could put on it to add some extra splendor. So he's got the panty airplanes, he's got the Mission Accomplished banner, he's got the American flag, and it's just so out there. You can't help but look at it and smile.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been pretty critical of the efforts of most of the anime companies to actually effectively market this stuff, because in mm-hmm. the past, you just don't see a lot of it. And something like the Strike Witches campaign, as much as I'm sort of jabbing at it for not being as fun, like, it irritates me that everyone repeats it thinking they're the funny guy, but that's the way to sell something. That's a really good marketing technique, and we just don't see enough of it. When you're thinking up ways to market things, where do you draw your inspiration from? Like, what do you take?
Well, me personally, I always think about, number one thing I keep in mind is, no matter what show it is, there's someone out there in the fandom that is their favorite show ever, and you have to do it justice. I think about what it would be like if I was on the other side of the fence and I didn't hear about this show. I wanted to hear about it, and I would want to, as a fan, to know that the people marketing it really care about it and they're into it and they like it and they love it just as much as I do, and we can look forward to the release together. So that's how I approach things. But I also, with that, you know, the quirkiness of, you know, stuff like I've done, you know, not Strike Witches, but stuff like that. It's just, you got to have fun with it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all playing around with essentially cartoons. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be so bright-eyed and optimistic about it, because every kid when they're little would love to work in animation when they grow up. And for those of us who can't draw or voice act, we go into marketing.
Right. So to bring it back to cosplay a little bit, talk a little bit about how you've managed to make the two sort of dovetail. Because I know on the blog, you've got your Always Be Cosplaying posts. Were those ideas of yours that sprang forth from you? I mean, how often do you get the opportunity to combine the two sort of worlds?
Well, with the Always Be Cosplaying, I wanted to, and when I started working at Funimation, I was more on this side of the industry, I realized so many people are into anime and they don't know or understand or are scared of the cosplayers. Mm-hmm. There's definitely, you know, two sets of fandom there, the cosplayers and then the people who are not. I wanted to write something on the blog that says, hey, we're fans too. Isn't this, you know, this is a cool way to express your fandom and make it very approachable, because a lot of times you can go to a cosplay website and there's a big learning curve. They expect you to know what you're doing, you're sewing, you have your photo shoot skills, all that stuff. But I want to always be cosplaying to be, let's just enjoy the fandom and introduce people to some of the cosplayers and some of the stuff that people are making. And I wanted to do a little thing on the blog, and I thought it'd be like, you know, one or two time thing, and now it's a regular thing, and you know, we can do it for shows that are launching soon, because a lot of times when a show launches here in America, there's already a lot of people who have cosplayed it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what better time to talk about it than, you know, right before the DVD comes out and everyone can get excited about it. Right.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, I've really noticed over the years is that there's a lot of fans who want to get into cosplay, but they're extremely daunted by it. Not only like by the prospect of having to make the costume, but also the reaction that they'll get from seasoned cosplayers. You know, there's a lot of fear that people have of trying to cosplay because they're worried that they won't be accepted into this second fandom, as you call it.
Well, that is, I mean, if I was starting cosplay right now, I would feel very much the same way, because especially since there's so many cosplayers now and so many of them are just so good, just starting out is just, it can be really, really, really daunting. To which I say, just remember why you're cosplaying, that you love these shows, love this fandom, love the manga, anime, whatnot, and just go for it. Because everybody starts from somewhere. I mean, my first costumes are not the same level as the stuff I create now. And no matter how good you are when you start cosplaying, you can learn so much through this hobby of working with strange materials and whatnot. And if someone is, you know, you don't go into a room full of new people and just instantly make a bunch of new friends. You just got to keep doing it and just, you know, have fun. And if you're having fun, it's going to be infectious. And I could tell everybody who's thinking about cosplaying, some of my best friends from my entire life I made through this hobby. I mean, these are people who I am just going to know for the rest of my life. Just these really, really strong friendships. So why pass up that type of opportunity? Just go for it.
Right. Here's a question. Is there a place that a new cosplayer can go? Because the daunting side of cosplay fandom are the, I would say the, I call them the hens, very judgmental, bitchy hens that, you know, if a photo of you in your, you know, first time Naruto costume comes across their screen, they're more than happy to just rip you to pieces in the forums or whatever. Is there a place a new cosplay fan can go to just get the information they want without being exposed to that kind of rotten side of the community?
Well, there's always looking at cosplayers through, you know, print media. There's actually a lot of really good books that come out of Japan that have cosplayers in it and are featured. Just like when you visit a new forum, you want to lurk for a while before you start posting. Mm-hmm. I'd say, you know, lurk for a while, see what people are doing, see what you like, and do it. And there's also, but, you know, as optimistic as I want to be, anytime you put a picture of yourself out there on the internet, there's going to be someone who will be mean about it. Mm-hmm. No matter who you are, no matter how beautiful you are, how awesome your costume is, no matter what, there's, you know, haters are going to hate.
Yep.
And it's, over these years, I've developed quite a thick skin about it, and that, you know, It just kind of rolls off me now. But I also see newer cosplayers that they're being picked on for really no reason, and it just tears them up inside, and that makes me rage because they're fans too. And to the general world, you know, anime is still really, really, really niche, and just going to a convention kind of makes you a freak in some people's eyes.
Yep.
Why can't we all stick together in this big fandom? So as far as places to go for, you know, your first time cosplaying and posting photos, I'd say places like American Cosplay Paradise, cosplay.com, just, you know, have a conversation. Find cosplayers you like on, you know, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Maybe think about joining a cosplay group and have your first cosplay experience be with other people who are like-minded. So if you're feeling a little shy, you can go in the background. But if you're feeling really outgoing, you can go up front, too. So there's many ways to go about it. It's just, it is daunting. I won't lie about that. But you just gotta keep trying. It's like, you know, your first time, like, doing dance class or whatever, you know, maybe you'll fall over during your recital, but you'll eventually get really...
Yeah, okay, well, that makes sense. And before we get to the Twitter questions, I've always wanted to ask a cosplayer this, and Bamboo, I know you'll back me up on this. As a writer and as a journalist, it is virtually impossible to get you guys to cooperate with, like, an article about you or featuring your costumes. I don't know why cosplayers are such flakes about being covered. Bamboo, I know you've had experience with this.
Total flake. And it doesn't make sense because the article's about you. Don't you want that? I don't understand at all. They take forever to email back. Sometimes they don't email back. You ask for a picture, they don't send it to you. Ugh, it's a hassle.
Is that a thing? I mean...
I've actually noticed it, and I try not to be that girl. I try really hard.
We appreciate that.
It gets harder these days with, you know, being a brand manager, too, and that you're just so busy and your email box is always so full. But, yeah, it is a little – there is a little bit of a higher instance of flakiness. But there's also, I've noticed, there's a growing sense of entitlement among cosplayers. There's a lot of this, well, you can use my picture, but I have to be paid, to which I go – oh my gosh, you're dressed up as someone else's character. You're supposed to be having fun. This is not everybody on the take. It's journalism. Just, you know, accept the compliment. Yeah. Buy a couple copies of the newspaper and show your grandma. Just, you know, have fun. So I don't really know why, but I just know I don't want to be that person. And it's kind of a shame because, I mean, cosplayers are kind of cool. They're fun to look at. They're colorful. You know, they're like, you know, peacocks walking around with all their feathers and whatnot. Of course, they want to be paid attention to. You're not going to put on your big Mecha Gundam costume if you don't want someone to take your picture.
Yeah, that would be kind of weird. Don't look at me. So it sounds like those two kind of dovetail together then, the attitude, because you mentioned earlier there was an attitude that a lot of people are just sort of using it as a springboard to become a model or a, you know, whatever. If they're going in with that kind of bad faith attitude, they're also going to not appreciate coverage unless it benefits them monetarily, which means they just don't get this stuff at all.
Like, yeah, and that's the biggest shame of all of it, honestly, in that you really, if you want to be a model, go get an agent, be a model, have fun. It's really, you know, if you really just want to be pretty and have your picture taken, there are lots of guys out there who are willing to take your picture.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
If that's all you want is someone to take your picture and feel like a princess, you know, seriously, there's people out there to do it. And But if you want to, maybe I'm really old school in that. I think you should be really into it to do the cosplay side of it. I just think if you're going to dress up as a character, you can at least have watched the series.
Yeah. That
might be and good. If someone wants to do an article on you or take a picture of you or cover you, it's just take the compliment, be gracious, say thank you, and be thankful for it, and just tell all your friends so they can support that publication, website, whatever, and you can all geek out together. That's just me wanting to do like the full circle, all the nerds get together and have a big hug type of thing.
Yeah. Okay. What are you working on right now for Funimation? What brands are in your wheelhouse? Anything you want to plug?
Well, I've got I got a lot of stuff coming up later this year. I just came off some launches of Dragonaut, of course, and Rin, Daughters in the Masane, just released, which was a really fun release. And it was actually the first day in the door. The very first thing I got from my boss was a towel of Rin on it. And I opened it and I noticed it was made of ShamWow material.
Mm-hmm. Ew.
And she's not wearing much. And me in my typical classy style, I grabbed the first thumbtacks I could find and I put it on my wall.
Right.
So finally releasing Rin was just really, really cool. And I'm still still nerding out over it, tracking it everywhere I go. But as for stuff that's coming up later on, and I totally can't talk about it besides just scream with everyone else, I'm working on Eden of the East, which is one that I really, really wanted. I love this show so much. Mm-hmm. And Hetalia. Mm-hmm. Hetalia Access Powers, which is also going to be a lot of fun. And then it just, lots of other things. Like I said, I have about 30 brands right now, and they're all in various states of their life cycle. And I'm also in charge of the upcoming Save line, the Super Amazing Value Edition, which is really, really cool because if you're like me and you like anime a lot and you just want to buy a lot of anime, this is going to be a really good way to get a lot of it for cheap and try out some new genres and stuff maybe you hadn't tried before and be able to do it at a really cool price.
Now, is that replacing the Viridian collection or whatever that other bargain line was?
Well, they're not really... I wouldn't call them a replacement. They're different. It's just some titles are getting a save release. Mm-hmm. Some are not. You just never know. And they're all in the save line for different reasons.
Uh-huh.
So it's a really good cross section of a lot of genres to expose people to anime. So there's no real predictive reason to know if something is going to go into save because there's just no like one set reason for it. But they're all, everything that's going into save is really, really good.
I bet someone with video scan could predict.
Yes, if someone had video scan, they could. But a lady never tells.
Right, right. Okay, all right. Well, let's go ahead and get to your Twitter questions. We got some interesting ones here. Okay, from Rob Comet 1, have you ever seen someone doing an Oshi dog cosplay? And I assume he's referring to Mamoru Oshii's beloved Basset Hound. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, I have not. That would be pretty interesting, but no, I have not seen that.
Wow, that's so oblique.
Yeah, that's kind of...
Wake up. Man, this is the costume I've been dying to do my entire life. I would like to dress up as some director's dog who he has a deep fascination with.
Well, I saw that and be like, is that cosplay or is that performance art?
It might be performance art at that point.
Yeah, it was kind of like AX last year when you had all the AX cosplayers and you had the people lining up for the Michael Jackson memorial. It was like, who's with what crowd?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what's going to happen, though, is after this podcast, you're going to get some, like, half-naked guy going up to the Funimation booth. He'll just have, like, spots painted on his chest with some ears. And you'll be like, what the hell are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I'm Oshi's dog, obviously.
Just a shirtless guy with a Halloween Basset Hound mask on.
Yeah, Adam is making the no moss hand. He's like, no moss, no moss. I gotta see that.
Okay, from everyone's favorite Gia at Anime Vice, she wants to hear about how awesome Thundercleese is.
Oh, Thundercleese. Thundercleese is the totally metal bangle. He's a he's a snow bangle kitten, and he's actually Taiga's little brother. And he loves to attack everything, but he's super cute while he does it. But he's really metal, and he likes to attack Adam, which I find hilarious because he's just the sweetest thing ever to me. But when it comes to Adam, he just wants to, like, rage. So it's kind of awesome. Thundercleese is amazing.
Are Bengal cats more prone towards that kind of sort of semi-feral behavior, where they're just a little more violent?
No, not at all. By the time they become Bengal, is, you know, the breed Bengal, they're so far removed from an Asian leopard cat that the only thing they have left is their spots. They're actually just really, they're like little plushies that you carry. They just have a lot of personality. They're just a little bit more athletic than a normal cat. And they're a little bit smarter, too. They're very conniving. But as far as being, you know, vengeful or attacking, no. Yeah, there's, like, I'm pretty sure Taiga is, like, looking at me and she's, you know, thinking of how to dominate the world. But as far as actually doing anything about it, no, probably not.
Okay, from Tim Mon. Oh, he's going to get some shit from me for this. Okay, Tim Mon wants it from timmonbooks.com. If you don't know his blog, he's a British chap. He wants to know how you sparkle and dazzle so darn much.
I think I actually answered this on Twitter.
Oh god.
Uh-huh. What did I say? I take glitter in my tea and during the holidays, rhinestones. I just sparkling dazzling actually came about at AX 2001. The first time I judged AX Masquerade, I was a little nervous and I was describing the Shiva cosplayer that was just covered in rhinestones, and it turns out later on she's become one of my closest friends, Amy Major Steinberger. I was explaining this costume to the audience while I was wearing my big fluffy orange maid costume with rhinestones. It was just, you know, it was like a Moe explosion. And I kept saying, she was just sparkling and dazzling and sparkling dazzling, and it just, I went back and I looked, I listened to the tape, and I was like, oh my gosh, I said sparkling dazzling like 10 million times. So it kind of stuck that people started calling me sparkling dazzling. And that's where it came from.
Gotcha. Okay. From Alex Leavitt. What is your opinion on the difference between cosplay culture between Japan and America and elsewhere?
It's actually, Japan is automatically in hard mode in that you go to Japan and you cosplay, and if you go to a big cosplay event, you're given your 3x3 square in which to change, and you need to keep all your stuff on you at all times. That's why you see, if you see some Comic Con pictures, you'll see the cosplayers with their little rolly bag behind them. Mm-hmm. The times that I cosplayed in Japan, both the times were at anime musicals, I changed in the bathroom, and it was very tiny, and I was, you know, just huge Gaijin Sailor Venus thing going, ah, Tokyo Smash. Mm-hmm. And so you're changing in this really tiny place, and you still have to look super fabulous against all these other Japanese cosplayers who can just change in these tiny places and be amazing. So just by going out in costume in Japan, you've already, you know, you're already at hard mode. But there's just so many in Japan, the girls especially, they know all their poses. They stay in one spot, and people take photos of them, and they stay there for their 2 hours. And then they grab their rolly bag and they, you know, go home or wherever. And they don't walk around outside of the event in costume. As you see here in America, you'll see people just, you know, wearing their costumes to Denny's. But in Japan, no, you just don't do that. As far as, you know, Mexico, I was a guest at a convention in Mexico. It's a little bit more like the U.S. Without the whole staying overnight in hotels thing. People kind of commute in. But it's really just, I mean, all over the world, they have their own little, their own little way of doing things, but I found Japan to be especially challenging, but not in a bad way, and just a, okay, this is what you have to do this here. Right. Okay, I accept your challenge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, from Gundam Pilot Spaz, who runs otakuinreview.com, what is the most risque cosplay you've seen someone get away with?
Oh boy.
Oshii's dog.
No. I heard, I did not see this in person, but I did hear the legend of somebody, you know, going back to the Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, I did hear about somebody cosplaying the Venus suit, which is the one that's like, you know, three rhinestones and a chain. I did not see this in person, though. But the most risque one I've seen pull off, besides the various, you know, takes on sexy no jutsu, there was at one fanime, there was a girl who was dressed as Chocolate Misu from Bakuratsu Hunters.
Huh.
And she was wearing the suspenders, and they were very thin suspenders, and they were held on with just the tiniest bit of glue. And I was convinced I was going to see something that, you know, maybe the whole convention didn't get to see, didn't need to be seen. Mm-hmm. But she was confident. She pulled it off. And I guess she was, you know, within the legal limit of showing stuff. So that was kind of like, wow, that's awesome.
God bless America.
Yeah. I cosplayed Cutie Honey, and I was always kind of scared, you know, with all, you know, the tape and the glue and everything. But I could never do suspenders. That's way too much for me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I got a couple here from Husky Boy. What is it like juggling multiple projects while designing and coordinating cosplay for a convention at the same time?
Well, it is a little difficult because you have, now working as a brand manager, it's all just, you know, the weekends are very short and very precious, and making costumes, I had to spread it out over multiple weekends, multiple months to get things done, keep that motivation going. And of course, you know, being an anime fan, and being so into this stuff, it's, my work is always on my mind. I'm like always thinking about anime. I always think about cool stuff I could do. So I'm already in the mode where I'm juggling a million things at once. And that's kind of how I work best. I work really well under pressure and kind of thrown in the deep end, see if you can sink or swim. So, and on one hand, I really like the challenge. But on the other hand, sometimes I wish, wow, I've been sewing all day Sunday, and I wish I could have a couple hours Monday to just finish this up. But no, you got to turn off and then next Saturday pick it up again. So I'd say that's the hardest part, is just the starting and stopping.
We'll go ahead and get straight to AJM Karate 717. What is one Funimation title you feel deserves more attention or praise than it gets?
Oh, wow. What a loaded question. Well, of course, you know, of course, all of them deserve more attention. But I'd say as far as one title, I would actually have to say, qualify two ways. In the anime community and a genre, I really believe that the live action titles don't get as much notice in the anime community. Mm-hmm. Maybe because, you know, we're all anime fans, we're so used to watching animation, but some of the live action stuff is really, really good. And I think some people just don't look at it for whatever reason. And stuff like, you know, Shinobi and Ichi and, you know, Love and Honor and Hana and, you know, upcoming stuff like Hong Kong Connection and Robo Geisha. Really, you know, really fun, you know, good things that I think maybe some anime fans just kind of gloss over, but they really should go back and look at them as a whole. I mean, all the live action stuff does really, really well. I don't see as a lot of, like, you know, hearts and flowers for it, say, like with hardcore cosplayers or anything.
I'm going to bet you money right now that there's going to be hearts and love for Robo Geisha, because those trailers have been, like, galloping through the nerd realm forever now.
Yeah, and I was actually another, speaking of Robo Geisha, I was assigned Robo Geisha. Mm-hmm. So that was having watched the trailer and passed it around to my friends, not knowing anything, I was like, dude, man, you gotta see this. This is the best trailer ever. It's gonna change your life. So many months later, to have it, you know, show up on my brand manager assignment list of like, oh my gosh, I got Robo Geisha. This is so awesome. So I got these screeners from Japan, and I totally watched it twice as soon as I got it. It was a life-changing experience. And as far as the movie goes, imagine that trailer 2 hours long. It's pretty much like that the entire way. It's wow. Awesome. I love Robo Geisha. I love Robo Geisha so much.
That's good, because you're going to be living it for a while.
Yes.
I haven't seen it myself, but I am looking forward to that release. That should be a lot of fun. Okay, also from the same guy, we've got one more after this. From the same guy, what has been your favorite property to work with and why?
Wow, that's also, they're all, I'm very, very fortunate that I've been given so many different things. They're all really awesome in their own ways, and I mean that completely, completely sincerely from the bottom of my heart. They're all so amazing in their own ways. But of the one that's really sticking out in my head right now is Rin, Daughter of Namasune, because it was so unlike anything else Funimation had put out before. And we got to do a lot of cool things with it. And it's got It's got three trailers, which is pretty amazing. And I have to give a shout out to the people who work in all the creative departments, you know, the trailers and the artists and the copywriting. All of that just really came together for Rin and everything from the ground up. It was like, it was almost like this, you know, charmed creation, and that all the pieces, just all of us on the creative team just had the same mind going throughout the whole thing. And that's the entire experience I'll never forget. I mean, I just the whole launching of Rin was just so awesome. And I know that coming up with some of the titles later on this year, I'm realizing after having done Dragonaut and Rin and Ichi and the others that the whole launch experience is so, you only get to do it once and it's really special. So enjoy it while you're doing it. So all of the shows I get, I'm just enjoying and loving the process. And it's just, I mean, it's like a dream come true, really.
Before we get to this final question, how do you, and I personally reviewed Rin. How do you respond to reviews? How do you take them? Do you take them personally?
No, and I think that's, I really can thank my cosplay experience for that. That I can't, if you take everything that's said about you or the things that you do on the internet personally, it will destroy you very quickly. It'll give you a complex, it'll give you a tick, it'll make you not ever want to go out in public ever again. I like it. I like the not so great reviews, and I like the awesome reviews equally. And I'm actually, I mean, as an anime fan, I've been reading ANN for years, and I've always loved the reviews, everything. As like, you know, every time a new one pops up, I'm always clicking on, like, oh my god, what's this like? And now seeing some of the things I worked on pop up, it's really, I like them all. Honestly, I really, really like them all, and it's interesting to see how people view the properties, because, you know, being brand manager, you're so in deep with the show that sometimes you can forget this is someone's first time with this. But when it, you know, comes to Rin, of course, I've watched the show 100 times.
Yeah.
You know, to hear the perspective of someone who just popped it in and watched it once. And I realize it's not, no show is everybody's cup of tea. But I like diversity in titles, and I think Rin really represents something that is different for anime, especially in the last few years. And in that way, it's extra special.
Okay, so our final question is from Hannah, no last name given. Do you have any sway over which shows get licensed?
Well, we all, I mean, the great thing about Funimation, I'm not sure how many people really, I mean, we all know this. I'm not sure how much people, you know, outside in the fandom know this. There's so many people in the company that are just super duper nerdy for anime. I mean, we love it. You know, we eat it, sleep it, drink it. And all of us have shows that we really like, we would like to see, you know, picked up. And then it is ultimately up to the acquisitions team and just huge process of, do you want to get a show? How well would it do? What's the price? Is it even available? Has it been licensed? The whole, you know, who's the licensor? All of that comes together in one package, and that whole process, you know, leading up to it eventually getting signed and assigned and, you know, worked on, voice acting, casting, all that stuff coming together. I am very free with my opinions on everything. So I feel, you know, and maybe part of that comes from cosplay, and that I'm not afraid to, you know, get out there and, you know, say my opinion and kind of be on stage. But if there's something that I really like that's coming out of Japan, I will tell everybody around, like, hey, you got to see this. This is really, really good. Go and look at it. This is really good. So I think all of us talking together about things we like is really, they do pay attention. They do pay attention to what we say. And of course, you can't have every single thing that you want. I can't just go up and go, I want all the animes. I want them all to be mine. Mm-hmm. And no, they're not always all available. But I'm lucky that I feel so happy that some of the things I really liked got picked up. And then I feel happier when things that I really like get picked up. And then I get to work on them. And I get to work on them with the awesome creative team. So I guess that's a really roundabout way of answering that.
Right. Secondly, and finally, as a female anime fan, are you ever consulted as a member of that demographic when Funimation is looking to license something?
Well, girls, you know, girls and boys always have very, very valuable opinions. And I'm not, being into anime for so long, I'm not typical female demographic. I mean, I like action shows. I like shonen shows. I don't have the typical tastes that one would think of a 30-year-old woman. So there's that. But I like a little bit of everything. I don't just like the shoujo stuff. I don't just like the action stuff. I really like everything. I mean, as I said before, I'm a fan of Sakura Taisen, so I really like everything on a certain level. But it is always nice to get a female perspective and, you know, a female marketer perspective too, and someone who's going to a lot of cons and interacting with the fans. And I love the anime conventions. I love just observing and listening and finding out what the fans want and always relaying that information. So yeah, I'm very happy that I get asked my opinion about things, mm-hmm. and it's just. It's still like, oh, wow, you asked me. Oh, this is awesome. I'll totally tell you why that rules.
Right. Okay, well, that's it. That's all we've got. And I just want to thank you for coming on. That was a lot of fun, very insightful. And thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for having me. Like I mentioned on Twitter that this is kind of like going on the Larry King Live of anime, but, you know, without the suspenders and awkward moments. So this is when you guys asked me, I was like, oh my gosh, I get to go on ANN. Oh my gosh, I've been reading the site forever. So it's equally
Larry King.
yeah, well, how do you know I'm not wearing suspenders?
You might be.
Okay, well, again, thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, that's our show. I want to thank Charlene and Bamboo for joining me this week. Don't forget, everybody, please subscribe to us on iTunes. That's a good thing to do. And we'll see you all next week.